You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, first and foremost, man, I hope everybody had a great week. It's been a long, busy week, y'all, but we made it. It's finally Friday. The weekend is here, man. Just excited to sit down, relax, and enjoy some sports, man. We got college basketball. We got the NBA and the All-Star break that's coming up soon. And let's not forget, man, we have the AFC and the NFC championship games that are going to be going down on Sunday to determine who will advance to Super Bowl 57, man. Can't wait to dive deeper into the topics, man. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about today, man. So look, without further ado, let's not waste no more time, man. Let's get right into it. So let's start with the NFC and the AFC championship matchups, man. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give you guys a preview of the matchups, man. Talk a little bit about how these teams match up against one another. And then I'm going to give you who I feel are the X factors for each of these teams heading into Sunday. So let's talk NFC championship first. So we got the San Francisco 49ers that will be facing the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, man. The Eagles actually opened as a 2.5-point favorite in this game. And the over-under in this game is 46 points. So as we know, we saw the 49ers take care of business at home last week and knocking off the Dallas Cowboys to advance to the NFC championship game. So let's look at these teams, man. Let's see again, like how do these teams match up with one another? Let's look at the team stats. So for points per game, the 49ers are averaging 26.5 points per game. The Eagles are averaging 28. The 49ers are allowing 17.5 points per game, and the Eagles are allowing 7. The 49ers average 377 yards per game, and the Eagles average 404. In regards to passing, the 49ers are averaging 238 yards to the Eagles 256. Rushing, 49ers are averaging 138 to the Eagles 147. Yards allowed, 49ers are allowing 319 yards of offense per game, and the Eagles 253. Pass yards allowed. So breaking this down even further, the pass yards allowed is 229 a game by the 49ers, 135 by the Eagles. Rush yards allowed, 90 by the 49ers, 118 by the Philadelphia Eagles. So let's also look at the injury report, man, and these key injuries heading into this matchup. So this is something that you definitely want to keep an eye on and focus on heading into Sunday, because these injuries, man, these are some key injuries that could, I don't want to say determine the game, but they could have a significant impact on the game. So for the 49ers, we had Christian McCaffrey, who's dealing with a calf injury, Deebo Samuel, who's dealing with an ankle injury, and Elijah Mitchell, excuse me, who's dealing with a groin injury. All did not practice the other day. I want to say that was Tuesday and Wednesday. They didn't practice. So that is something to watch, being that Christian McCaffrey is a heavy part of the San Francisco 49ers offense. And then let's not forget about Elijah Mitchell, is another running back. You know, he's also a big focal point. So you're talking about their 1-2 punch at running back, and Deebo Samuel, you know, dealing with an ankle injury. How severe is that injury? You know, how effective can these guys be in this game? And Deebo is a guy that, you know, obviously the 49ers utilize him in a number of different ways, whether that's running it straight up in the backfield, reverses as a receiver, you know, whatever it may be. They utilize him. He's that gadget man for the 49ers offense. Same thing with Christian McCaffrey as well. So something to watch there. On the Eagles side, you have Avante Maddox. He's dealing with a toe injury, and you have Lane Johnson, their offensive tackle, who's dealing with a groin injury. Both of them did practice, but at a limited capacity. So, you know, again, a toe and a groin injury, those are some injuries that, you know, that can impact the game if you decide to allow, those players to play. So definitely something to watch. And in Lane Johnson in particular, you're talking about, offensive line, protecting Jalen Hurts. So will Lane Johnson be able to go? And if he can go, how long can he, stay in the game? And can he be effective while he's out there protecting Jalen Hurts? Because we all know the 49ers are a team that likes to bring pressure. So can Lane actually, do enough to protect them and help keep that pocket clean for Jalen? And let's look at, now this is another thing I want to look at and something that we should pay attention to for each one of these teams, and that's their playoff stats. So for the postseason currently. So just breaking it down, looking at the Eagles right now, and I know they play one game, so but this is still important to look at when we're heading into this matchup on Sunday is, what are their stats for each one of these teams? How are they, how are they matching up? So for the Eagles, they're currently first in total yards, first in rushing, first in yards allowed, and tied for second in sacks with 5. So that's pretty significant, first in all those, all three of those categories, and almost first in sacks. That's big. So the Eagles are definitely coming into this game full of confidence, knowing that they are a complete team top to bottom, knowing that they can make things happen. And, obviously they should be confident, man. I mean, this is, you get the 49ers coming in at home, they're definitely more than capable of being able to, produce in front of their home crowd. Looking at the 49ers, they're second in total yards in the postseason amongst all playoff teams, fourth in passing, third in rushing, third in yards allowed, fourth in sacks, and they're second in turnovers. So the thing that I really wanted to pay attention to, so you're talking about 1-2 between the Eagles and 49ers in total yards, with the Eagles being first, Niners being second. But the other thing that I wanted to, like how we zeroed in with the sacks for the Eagles, the one thing that I wanted to look at for the 49ers is being second in turnovers. So being able to get the ball, back in that offense, in the offense's hands. So that's going to be something to watch there. Can they create turnovers in this game and get their offense back on the field and allow Kyle Shanahan to methodically move this offense down the field and put up points? All right, so that was the NFC Championship game. Now let's go to the AFC Championship game. So we got the Cincinnati Bengals going on the road to play the Kansas City Chiefs for the second time in a row, the second consecutive season, the AFC Championship game on the road in Kansas City. This one is going to be taking place 6:30 p.m. Well, kicking off 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bengals are a 1-point favorite in this matchup. Well, actually, the line in this one. So the crazy thing about this game, the line switched in this game like six or seven times throughout this week. So it was like Bengals were like the Chiefs were a 2-point favorite, and the Bengals were a 2.5-point favorite, and it went back to the Chiefs, back to the Bengals. Then it ended up, after Mahomes said that he felt pretty good, then the line went back to the Chiefs, and now the Chiefs are a 1-point favorite. It's crazy. The over-under in this game is 47 points. So similar to, last game, it's almost identical. 46 points in the NFC Championship game. This over-under is 47. So let's look at the stats statistically for each one of these teams, see how they match up amongst one another. So points per game, the Bengals are averaging 26 points per game. The Chiefs are 29. The Bengals are allowing 13.5 points per game. The Chiefs are allowing 20. In regards to total yards, the Bengals put up 378 yards of total offense to the Chiefs, 424. The Bengals averaged 282 pass yards a game. The Chiefs averaged 308. The Chiefs averaged 95.5 yards rushing a game. The Chiefs averaged 115. The Bengals averaged 354 yards allowed, and the Chiefs averaged 361. The Bengals allowed 245 yards passing per game, and the Chiefs 217, and the Bengals allow 109 rushing yards to the Chiefs 144. So again, something to watch there. That's something, you know, looking at these teams, you know, pretty evenly matched for the most part. Now let's look at the injury report and the key injuries for the Bengals and the Chiefs in this one. So the Bengals, their guard Alex Kappa is dealing with an ankle injury. Jonah Williams, their starting offensive lineman, as well as he was dealing with a knee injury. Trey Flowers, their cornerback, is dealing with a knee injury as well. Now, Alex Kappa and Jonah Williams did not practice for the past couple of days. Trey Flowers did practice, but he was limited. So that's definitely something to watch there. And we're talking about protecting Joe Burrow here. Again, you know, offensive line. This is two key injuries on the offensive line. And, you know, these guys have been injured for, you know, for a while, I think they've been injured for a few weeks. I know Jonah's been down for a while. But, you know, regardless of these injuries, you know, the Bengals have been able to figure it out. You know, they've been able to protect Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's been able to, you know, maneuver the pocket, you know, tuck it and run when he needs to, get the ball out quick when he needs to. So it hasn't been an issue. You just look back to last year in that playoff game on the road when the Bengals went to Tennessee and Joe Burrow was sacked, what, 9 times and still, you know, was able to come out of Tennessee with a victory. So, you know, that just goes to show you how resilient this Bengals team is. And I know this is a new team this year, but, you know, these guys are battle tested and they went through, you know, a struggle last year in that playoffs, and they were still found a way to win, you know, and still found a way to battle back being down 21-10 in Kansas City. So, you know, that's definitely something to pay attention to and something to watch there. And so the key injuries for the Chiefs, you're looking at Mecole Hardman. He's dealing with a pelvis injury. He was limited. Jerick McKinnon, their running back, he's dealing with an ankle. He was dealing with an ankle injury, but he was a full participant in practice. And then you got Pat Mahomes. Now, this is the biggest story heading into this game, man. Patrick Mahomes had that ankle sprain, the high ankle sprain that he suffered last week against the Jaguars at home. We saw him hobbling around and around the field, and he ended up going back into the game. But couldn't even really step in. He couldn't step into any throws, so he was really throwing it with pure arm strength and handing the ball off. He had to pretty much hop to go hand it off to his running back. It was crazy to see. You know, it's dangerous to, you know, have him out there like that. But, you know, that's just the competitive nature of a guy like Patrick Mahomes, just wanting to stay in the game and wanting to compete. You saw that once he went off to the sidelines and he was completely frustrated, slamming his helmet down when he had to go to the locker room because he wanted to be in that game. So, you know, that's something that you love to see in a young player. But sometimes, you know, like we said before, you got to protect the player from themselves sometimes and just be cautious when it comes to these injuries that could be, you know, significant to their, to not only to a game, but we're talking about their career. So, but, you know, he did come out and say, like I mentioned before, that he does feel better. You know, he was able to practice, so he said he feels good. So now we don't know what that percentage is. We don't know if that's 70%, 80%. We don't know what that is. You know, only Patrick Mahomes knows. So we'll see and we'll find out when the game is played and when they play their first offensive, you know, series. So we'll see the approach that they're going to take. And then looking at the stats for each one of these teams so far in the postseason, just some stats that I wanted to highlight. So the Bengals, they're third in turnovers. So being able to, you know, take the ball away. And I know that they had a turnover last week in Buffalo. They were able to go into Buffalo, get a huge win. And you know, they really would have created a couple of turnovers. I think a couple of interceptions were dropped in that game that Josh Allen threw, a couple passes that Josh Allen threw. So this Bengals defense, man, they showed up and they showed out, and you know, they got pressure on Josh Allen. They didn't get beat, you know, when any huge plays. So they came and they balled, and you know, Joe Burrow and those guys did their things. But anyway, like I said, gonna go deeper into that as the show goes on. But their third in turnovers, excuse me, that's something I want to highlight. The Chiefs, they are fourth in rushing, and they're tied for third in turnovers. They're tied for third in turnovers. So them and the Bengals both tied when it comes to the turnover battle. So that is, you know, so that was the matchup preview. So previewing each of those matchups, man. Now let's take a look at the X factor. So I'm going to give you the X factor, in my opinion, for each one of these teams. So let's start with the Eagles. So my X factor for the Philadelphia Eagles is my guy, Devontae Smith, man, Smitty. Devontae Smith last week, he had 6 receptions for 61 yards and a touchdown versus the Giants in their divisional round playoff game. Now, if Devontae Smith could continue to get open, make contested catches, put that pressure on the 49ers defensive backs, you know, that's actually going to help open it up more for A.J. Brown, in my opinion, to make plays. You know, we're talking about A.J. Brown. He's a 1,000-yard wide receiver. Devontae Smith's a 1,000-yard wide receiver. A.J. Brown is their leading receiver right now from a statistical standpoint. And I think that, you know, last week he struggled. He didn't really get too many targets. I think he only had somewhat about 3 catches or something like that, 2 or 3 catches last week. So he was, you know, frustrated about it because he does want more targets. But I think that if that running game is going really well, that's going to open up anything from the pass game regardless. But I just think specifically, I think that Devontae Smith is a key X factor, because with his ability to run routes, you know, he could create that attention. You know, if he's affecting the game early and often, these guys are going to be like, look, man, we got to switch something up. We got to try to take Devontae Smith out of the game. And then when they try to do that and make those adjustments, here comes A.J. Brown. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think that Smitty is key into helping open up that passing attack even more, like they would love to do. Now, let's look at the 49ers. X factor for the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, obviously we know Debo is always going to be an X factor, but I'm talking about Christian McCaffrey. He's second in rushing yards among all running backs in the postseason right now with 154. He can impact the game as a runner and a receiver. And look, since CMC has arrived in San Francisco, the 49ers won. They lost the first game when he was there against the Chiefs. But the next game, since that second game he was there, they've won 12 games in a row. And he leads the team in rushing yards with 746. So, you know, and he's been a very important part of this run that the Niners have been on. Like I said, he has an ability to impact the game in different ways. So definitely could see him as an X factor for the Niners. So let's look at the Chiefs. So my X factor for the Kansas City Chiefs is Isaiah Pacheco. So Isaiah Pacheco last week, he was averaging 7.9 yards per carry. And he had a huge 39-yard run to extend a drive on third down versus the Jaguars last week. And I believe on that same drive, the Chiefs ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive. He runs very hard. He runs angry. And the question here is, you know, can he help extend those drives? And I know you got Jared McKinnon, but I think, you know, who is the lead back. But I think Isaiah Pacheco, with the way that he runs, he can help extend drives. You know, now, will he do that in this game? Because this Bengals defense is not the Jaguars defense. This is a better defense. So how effective can he be? Can he be effective catching the ball out of the backfield? You know, can he be an effective blocker? I think that he is an X factor to watch in this game. And last but not least, the Cincinnati Bengals, man. I'm going Jamar Chase, man. Jamar, you know, he could put the pressure on the Chiefs secondary. He has the ability to get open. I mean, he's a great route runner. He can make the contested catches. You know, if he can have that big game, it's going to open it up for guys like T. Higgins, like Tyler Boyd. You know, those guys will be able to eat as well. You know, he had 5 receptions, 61 yards and a touchdown versus the Bills last week. And it, look, if you leave this guy in one-on-one matchups, he can really hurt you. Like, if you leave him out there one-on-one, he can hurt you. So, and, you know, Chase, and this is something that's interesting here. So, let's look at Chase stats versus the Kansas City Chiefs. So, he has averaged 8 receptions per game, 139 yards per game, and 4 touchdowns versus the Chiefs. And he set the Bengals single game record in week 17 of 2021 with 266 yards receiving against the Kansas City Chiefs. So look, Jamar Chase he's been having his way with the Kansas City Chiefs. So like I said, man, and I personally feel like, you know, with the Kansas City Chiefs, I don't think their secondary is as strong. I think that the fact that they get so much pressure with their front four and on quarterbacks, it really takes away, you know, it helps make up for the secondary. You know, I think that the secondary, you could really challenge them and you could take advantage of them, because I think there's holes there to really expose in that Chiefs secondary. But like I said, that defensive front with the ability to get that pressure on the quarterbacks, it really hides the fact that there's some holes in that secondary. So just interested to see, you know, how the Bengals game plan and how they're able to take advantage of that and protect Joe Burrow. And I think it's funny, before I move on to the next topic, man, I thought it was funny, you know, towards the end of that, the Bills game, when the Bengals players were talking to trash, saying like, you know, we'll see y'all in Burrowhead. Like, they're literally calling Arrowhead Burrowhead now. Like, that's crazy. But I'll talk more about that. I'm gonna talk more about that in you know, later on in the show. But I just thought that was pretty funny hearing that. But let's go to college basketball right now, man. So let's look at the top 10, a preview of the top 10. I know it's the AP top 25, but I'm not going to run down all 25 teams. Just going to focus on the top 10. And then I'm going to tell you who I think the best team in the nation is right now. So looking at the top 10, man, we got Purdue at number 1, Alabama at 2, Houston at 3, Tennessee at 4, Kansas State 5, Arizona 6, Virginia 7, UCLA 8, Kansas 9, and Texas at 10. So, and we know that there was some losses this past weekend. Actually, we had this past week/weekend. UCLA lost and Kansas lost like the third game in a row this week. So they've been trending downhill. They went from 3 all the way to 9 and still falling. So we'll see what happens with them by the time Sunday and Monday gets here, when they release out the new rankings. But to answer the question, you know, who is the best team in the nation? I'm looking at this top 25, man, and this top 10 specifically, and Alabama is the best team in the nation, man. Alabama is the best team. Now, I'm not taking anything away from what Purdue, you know, is done, because Purdue is a force to be reckoned with. I mean, Purdue, though, look, when it comes to rim protectors and guys, like, they always had these two huge, like they always have like a huge center. They always have like a huge power forward. Like, it's crazy. Like, Purdue is always big in the paint. They have a really good basketball team, but I personally think that Alabama has the best team. You know, I'm looking at, you know, an Alabama team who's 18-2, 8-0 in the SEC, and they're first in the SEC right now, of course. Their best wins right now, number 12, Michigan State, number one UNC, number one Houston on the road. And then they had a pretty solid win against Arkansas, number 15 Arkansas on the road. I know Arkansas is banged up and injured right now, but they fought in that game, and it came down to the last few minutes of the game, and it was on the road in a hostile environment. So I do think that's still a solid win against an Arkansas team who last year was in the Final Four and was almost to the national championship. So, and then they also have a tough road win against a number 24 Mississippi State team who, you know, took it down to the wire this past Wednesday. 66-63, Alabama was able to escape that one at home. But, you know, Mississippi State is a tough team. So I just wanted to kind of highlight those wins. But I definitely think, like, the best ones off the top, of course, is Michigan State, UNC, and Houston. And that the best out of those, in my opinion, is on the road in Houston. Number one Houston on the road. Like, and they were down in that game and battling back and getting a huge victory like that. Come on, man. Like, Alabama is the best team in college basketball right now. And I'm not saying that, oh, it's not even close. I'm not saying that there's far better than Purdue. But I definitely think that they're the best team right now with the resume that they have compared to everybody else. You know, they're tied for the second best odds right now to win the NCAA tournament, which they're tied with Purdue. Houston is still the favorite right now to win. But Bama has already beaten them. So, again, Alabama, you're looking at them. They're the number one rebounding team in the nation with 46 rebounds, excuse me. And you know, the team, this Alabama team, the thing that I love about them the most is, you know, they're young. They have a lot of size and length. They have a deep roster, so they could go deep on the bench. They can shoot lights out from three. And they play great team basketball. Like, when this team is rolling and they're hitting their shots, they're hitting from three, like, it's lights out. Like, I watched them destroy LSU. Like, destroy Kentucky. Like, and they were hitting threes, like, back to back to back to back to back. And I'm not just talking about Brandon Miller. I'm talking about everybody. Everybody was eating from three, you know? And speaking of Brandon Miller, man, he's the best player in the SEC, the best freshman in the SEC. Some could argue the best freshman in the nation. Some might argue the best player in college basketball. I'm not going to say the best player in the nation, but definitely the best player in the SEC and the best freshman in the SEC. Definitely think that. I mean, he's averaging 19.5 points per game as a freshman, but he's had a few 30-point games this year already. So he's more than capable of putting a team on his back when needed and you know, making big plays. And the thing that I like about Brandon Miller is he lets the game come to him. He's not one of those guys that's going out here if he hasn't taken at least 5 to 10 shots, like, oh, now he's running around frantic. No, he plays very patient. He lets the game come to him. He passes it. He's a willing passer. You know, I watched him play in a game, and he didn't take his first shot until maybe 4 minutes before the first half was over with. He's definitely not one of those guys that is gonna force the issue when it's not necessary. You know, he's more willing to get his team involved. And then when his time comes, he doesn't disappoint. He makes the tough blocks. He makes the tough steals. He makes the tough shots. He knocks down the free throws. Like, and he's only getting better. And that's the thing. And that's not just with him, with this whole team. They're only getting better. I mean, looking at the roster, you know, alongside Brandon Miller, you got Javon Quinterly, Jaden Bradley, Charles Bediako, Noah Clowney, Nick Pringle. Mark Sears, excuse me, Noah Gurley, you know, these guys are, it's deep. They can ball too. They can really ball. So, you know, hats off and all credit in the world, man, to head coach Nate Oates, man. He's done a phenomenal job with this team, you know, keeping them focused. Like, I watch each and every game, and it's just he's very, very, very passionate and very hard on these guys to continue to remain focused no matter what the score is. And that's what you love to see in a head coach, to keep these guys focused. Yeah, you're up 30, but the game's not over. It's still 0-0 from all I'm concerned. Shoot, play like you're losing the game. You might be up like by 30, but play like you're losing the game. And I think that's the way that Nate Oates coaches, you know. Be disciplined. Keep your mind focused. You know, don't play sloppy. Because there have been moments where, you know, this season, and, you know, you get a big lead and you start playing sloppy. Things start getting messy. But he's really quick to, you know, look, call a timeout. Let's regroup. Let's reset this. Like, get back focused, you know. And I that's the one thing I really like about him. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm excited to see, you know, where Oates can take this team, where this team can go. Like I said, they have the capabilities and everything they need to be able to win this tournament. And I definitely think Alabama is going to get a number one seed. But I would love to see them get the number one overall seed. So, you know, that's going to be, you know, contingent upon, you know, if they win the rest of this season, or how the rest of the season plays out. You know, if they go ahead and win the SEC tournament and get the number one overall seed. So definitely excited about what's to come for Alabama basketball. And look, we're not just a football school. We're a basketball school now too, baby. Look, it's time. And this is, before I go on to the next topic, man, this is Alabama's highest ranking since being ranked number one in 2002. So it's been 21 years, y'all, but we back. moving on, man, let's go back to college football, and let's talk about a story that's been, you know, gaining more and more heat as the days go by, man. I'm talking about what's going on at Bethune-Cookman with Ed Reed. So Bethune-Cookman removed Ed Reed as their head coach, and students have been protesting after the decision. So just want to give you my thoughts about what's going on in this situation. So again, like I said, Bethune-Cookman, they parted ways with Ed Reed on last Saturday. They made the announcement that he would no longer be the head coach of the football team. And obviously we know that this came after, you know, Ed Reed, he complained publicly about, you know, the issues of the school's athletic facilities not being good enough, his office being dirty. You know, when he arrived on campus, he took to Instagram Live to express, you know, his frustrations, his concerns about the facilities, his office, all of that. He did this via Instagram Live. He rode around campus showing the conditions of the buildings around the campus and, you know, again, really challenging the athletic director, the administration. He was, look, really pissed off about it, you know, and you can understand why. He became very upset. You know, he said that he not only could build it, he could not only build a successful football program, but, you know, he also felt bad for the students, obviously. You know, in the administration, he also said that he said that the administration, you know, didn't care about the students. So this, you know, obviously created an uproar with Bethune-Cookman's athletic director, Reggie Theus. So Theus came out and he said that, you know, Reed's comments disturbed him. That he was dead wrong for what he said. He said that, look, he showed Reed everything that was good and everything that was bad about the program. He was completely aware of everything and the situation. But he said that Ed Reed acted like he was shocked and surprised. So pretty much he's saying Ed Reed put on a show. He already knew what the situation was. So on Tuesday, after, so like I said, this is a Tuesday So this happened Saturday when he was when they parted ways with Ed Reed. This past on this Tuesday, more than a dozen students they actually launched a sit-in on their campus in their campus chapel, which is White Hall. On Wednesday afternoon, about 40 students marched to Daytona Beach City Hall to voice their concerns to the leadership, the administration, about the living situations and living conditions on campus. You know, these students, they've been dealing with mold and mildew in their rooms. It's made it difficult for them to sleep. You know, some these kids are getting sick. They're coughing all night, not able to get rest for class. Like, it's a very chaotic situation. And the students said, look, these demonstrations, they're not going to stop until their needs are met. You know, every recently, you know, he came out and he said that he does want the job back. And we also recall he did go back on Instagram Live again when he was in the classroom with the football team, and he was completely pissed off. You know, he went on a pretty big rant about them not caring, them, you know, not wanting him to be able to do his job effectively, and talking about, you know, telling the team, look, you know, how much he cares about them, how much he cares about the students. And then one of the highlights that I thought that was very impactful was Deion Sanders, you know, calling, you know, while he was on the live and, you know, telling him that, look, he told him he was praying for him. He told him, you know, gave him some words of encouragement and told him, look, you know, this is God had an assignment for you, you know, and, you know, this is not where it ends. You know, he encouraged him in that time. And I think that was very powerful, the words that he shared. And if you hadn't, you know, seen it, I encourage you to go pull it up and watch and hear what Deion Sanders had to say about to Ed Reed about the situation. Everybody's been coming to him about this. I think that I saw something. I don't know if he was on CNN, but he was on some news outlet. They were interviewing him as well. And it's gotten crazy out here. And, concerns about inadequate funding of HBCUs, they've created lawsuits in the state of Florida, Mississippi, and Maryland. So, you know, just to give my take on this. I 100% understand where Ed Reed is coming from, when it comes to, you know, trying to build a successful football program and caring about the students. And, you know, you look and you see what you see what Deion Sanders went to Jackson State and how he was able to turn it around and everything like that. But, it didn't happen overnight. Obviously, this didn't happen overnight. It was a process. It took a lot, you know, but eventually things turned around. The facilities were built up. Everything was up to par. I don't disagree with his passion and how he felt about these conditions on campus, because that's ridiculous. You know, it is ridiculous that students have to go through that mold and mildew. And look, in the football facility, the athletic facilities aren't good. And, you know, the football players are students before they're athletes. So they're a part of that student crowd that's dealing with mold and mildew in their rooms too. So that's not okay at all. And like I say, I just brought up the fact about the lawsuits that have been created because of that. Like, there's no way you can't have a successful institution with those type of conditions. I don't necessarily agree with the way that he went about addressing it. I think going on Instagram Live to address it and stuff like that wasn't the best move. I think that you keep things like that internal. You voice your opinion. You continue to meet with the athletic director. You continue to meet with the administration, because him going on Instagram Live and him blasting that out like that, obviously that created anger and stirred up the athletic director. So, you know, when people's stuff gets brought to light and a microscope is put on them, and they get called out, and now the attention is all on the university. Now they're pissed off. And I think that was a situation that happened. Look, they're embarrassed. They're angry at Ed Reed. They're embarrassed because now everybody knows that, look, this campus is, look, it's, this isn't okay. And, you know, these students have been complaining about this for, I saw something about a couple of years. Like, this didn't just happen this year. So students have been complaining about this stuff like that. So their points were made, valid points were made. I just think that the approach wasn't the best, you know. And I guess I'm seeing it from Ed Reed's standpoint, viewpoint. He's like, look, he's wanting everything to go, you know, to happen, you know, at a certain point, so he can get there and be able to do his job effectively. And who knows what happened in those conversations? We don't know, you know. Yeah, the athletic director, Reggie Theus, may have told him the situation, but what did Ed Reed say in response to that? You may have told him and he was aware, but what was his response when you told him, look, this is how it is? Did he say, look, we need, did he tell you how he felt, and did you brush it off? Is there a sense? I think that Ed Reed felt like there was no sense of urgency in the situation. I think when he started to feel like that, and look, nobody's perfect at the end of the day. Nobody's perfect. People get upset. They react. That's what we do. And I think that he got so tired of, look, there's no sense of urgency here. I'm seeing these students. I'm seeing my team struggling right now. I don't like this. I'm looking at my space that I'm supposed to be working in. I don't like this. And he snapped. Like I said, there was a better way to handle it. I don't agree with the way he necessarily probably went about it, but I'm not disagreeing with what he said. And I hope that, you know, he does get the job back. I hope that they make those steps to be able to improve campus, be able to improve the living conditions for students. Because if you look, that's some stuff you could lose your school like that. You know, you could lose the university like that. Or they'll bring in some people who actually will get something done. You know, I don't know how the funding is for HBCUs and all of that, but, you know, I don't want to, you know, speculate on anything like that. But look, they got to, at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is something has to be done. Something's got to give. Something needs to be handled. Steps need to be taken. And, you know, that's all I had to say about it. I hope Ed Reed, you know, is able to get the job back, because I think that he'd do a really good, I think that he would do a great job, you know, for that football team, for that football program. And moving on, man, let's keep the ball rolling, man. Let's talk Joe Burrow. Okay, so looking at Joe Burrow, okay, so question here, and I know that we've all been thinking about this. If Joe Burrow beats Patrick Mahomes for the third time in a row, for the fourth time in a row, should he overtake Patrick Mahomes as the face of the AFC? If you didn't know, you know now. Joe Burrow has beaten Patrick Mahomes three times. Twice in Cincinnati, and once in the AFC Championship game last year in Arrowhead, Burrowhead, whatever you want to call it. And all of these games were close. All of them came within a field goal. They were all 3-point games. So to answer this question, yes. The answer is yes. If Joe Burrow goes into Arrowhead and beats Patrick Mahomes for the second consecutive year in a row in the AFC Championship game on the road in a hostile environment like that, he's the face of the AFC. 100%. 100%. And that's not to take away anything from Patrick Mahomes, but you don't lose to a guy four times in a row and remain that face of the AFC. It's Joe Burrow. Like, he's 3-0. He's thrown for 982 yards, 8 touchdowns, and an interception in all of those 3 games. I mean, having his way. As you can see, mistake-free. Like I said, only 1 interception. So, he's the only quarterback to beat Mahomes 3 straight times. But the thing that I like about it is, despite the success that he's had against the Chiefs, he still says, Burrow, when he was asked about it, he still said the Chiefs were the team to beat, you know, at the end of the day. And that's good to keep, you know, keep focused and understand, like, look, yeah, we're riding high right now, but look, that's still the team to beat. We still got to go there yet again. We still got to get it done. Yeah, we're the reigning AFC champions, but we got to go there and get it done again. We got to defend our crown from last year. So, but yeah, like I said, to answer that question, man, if Joe Burrow goes in there and beats them, he's the face of the AFC. And I argue that down with anybody. Like I said, Mahomes is in a different stratosphere, and we all know what talent he has, but look, you can't lose to a guy 4 straight times and keep that face of the AFC. I'm sorry. And then he went on the road and beat, you know, Josh Allen. You know, he played in the Super Bowl before Josh Allen. You know, not, you know, throwing any shade on Josh Allen. I'm just saying, in his short time that he's been in his league, he's done some really impressive things. Just like Pat Mahomes did when he was his first couple, few years in the league. So yeah. Now so we just talked about Joe Burrow. Let's talk about Jalen Hurts now. So how much pressure is on Jalen Hurts heading to this NFC Championship game? You know, for me, I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Hurts to win this game and advance to the Super Bowl. But he's built for it. He's built for this moment. I mean, you talk about a guy who's been doubted. He's been battle tested numerous times. But the thing about Jalen Hurts is he never lets it rattle him or faze him in any way. He rises to the occasion and elevates. When faced with adversity, Jalen has the ability to literally rise to the occasion. Like, he thrives in those moments. Like, he lives for those types of moments. And we saw this even when he was at Alabama, just the ability to stay level-headed and poised in chaotic environments. You know, I think that's something that helped him a lot in college, and I think that's something that's going to continue to help him, you know, in his NFL career and especially in his game. I mean, this is a home game, but this is to go to the Super Bowl. You know, Jalen has been a part of a couple of national championships. You know, he is a national champion, and he's looking to become a Super Bowl champion. You know, he's a tough kid, man. Like, people question, you know, how he would play in a divisional round. You know, obviously he had the shoulder injury, you know, that situation. He came out and he threw for 154 yards and 2 touchdowns. He also ran a ball 9 times for 34 yards and a touchdown. So, like I said, man, this dude is battle tested. Jalen, yeah, there's a lot of pressure being at home, being a number one seed, to handle business in advance to the Super Bowl. But he's built for this. Don't get it twisted. He's definitely built for it. And Jalen's looking to lead the Eagles to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2017 when they beat the New England Patriots. So, all right. So let's move on to our final topic, and one I couldn't wait to get to, and that's who's going to advance to Super Bowl 57, man. Y'all know I got to give you my predictions, man. The game's on Sunday. I got to give you my prediction today. I'm excited about this topic right here, man. So, let's get into it, man. So, again, the NFC Championship game is going down on Sunday. That game's actually going to be first. So, that one's at 3 p.m. My pick for the NFC Championship game, I'm rolling with the Philadelphia Eagles, man. I got to go with my boy Hurts and my boy Smitty, man. The Philadelphia Eagles, man. I'm picking them to advance to the Super Bowl. Again, man, looking at them in the postseason right now, they're number one in total yards a game, number one in rush yards, number one in yards allowed, and they're tied for second in sacks. My final thoughts. This game will not be easy, obviously. You know, the 49ers defense, they're going to be a tough challenge for the Eagles with the pressure that they're able to get on the quarterbacks. However, I definitely think that Jalen Hurts, you know, the Eagles, they're going to find a way to make plays and remain balanced on the offensive side of the ball. The Eagles defense will face a challenge now. They're trying to stop guys like CMC, Debo, Kittle, Ayuk. Like, these are some dogs for the 49ers. So it's going to be a challenge. But I do think that they're gonna force Brock Purdy into making a couple of mistakes, one or two turnovers, and I think that that's going to be the difference in the game. Now, they have had some trouble stopping the run, the Eagles have. I go back to that game when they played against Green Bay. Green Bay pretty much had their way, you know, running the football on them. But I think that, you know, they'll find a way to neutralize, you know, that. I'm not going to sit up here and say that they're going to completely stop it, but, you know, looking at the injury, you know, we don't know how effective, you know, McCaffrey is going to be. We don't know how effective Elijah Mitchell is going to be. So is Debo Samuel going to be used more in the backfield? You know, that's something that we're, you know, we don't know yet. So we'll definitely be paying attention to it. But again, I think the Eagles will capitalize. They'll force some turnovers, and I think they'll capitalize off those turnovers. And one last thing, man, the Eagles sack percentage on third down is 18%. The rest of the NFL is 9%. So when you get in third down situations, just know the Eagles are bringing that pressure. I'm getting the Eagles to win this game, advance to Super Bowl 57. All right, AFC Championship game. Again, you got the Bengals going on the road to Kansas City, second consecutive year in the AFC Championship game. My pick for this game, I'm rocking with the Cincinnati Bengals, man. That's where I'm going with Joe Burrow and the Bengals to get this win on the road. Second consecutive year in Arrowhead where they can officially name it Burrowhead. and the Bengals will advance, man. Now, looking at the postseason for the Bengals, so they put on a show last week, again, like I already mentioned, against the Bills on the road. They held the Bills to 10 points when they're averaging 28 per game. They were averaging 28 per game in the regular season. And the Bengals, they had over 400 yards of total offense, and they were 60% on third down. So that's going to be key in this game, too. Like, when you get in third down, like, their ability to be able to convert and continue to, you know, keep drives alive. And that's something that's going to help them keep Patrick Mahomes off the field and control the time of possession. That's what they want to do in this game. Utilize Joe Mixon. Pound the rock. Look, extend drives. Keep Mahomes and that offense off the field. Keep them out of rhythm. Their defense played great last week, and they got pressure on Josh Allen, and they didn't give up huge plays over the top. Now, my final thoughts, man. So this game is going to come down to whether or not the Chiefs' defensive line can get pressure on Joe Burrow. You know, Mahomes' ankle, like I said already, that's something to pay attention to because we don't know how healthy he really is. But again, can this Chiefs defensive line get pressure on Burrow? And when they get pressure, can they actually get him down on the ground? Because there's one thing to get pressure, but can you stop him? Because he has the ability, like I said before, to maneuver the pocket. He could get outside the pocket, and he can make throws on the run. He can tuck it and run when he needs to. So how are they going to be able – what are they going to be able to scheme up and try to confuse him? There's not too many things that are going to confuse Joe Burrow. So what are they going to do? And again, you know, Mahomes, like I said, the ankle, something to pay attention to. However, I do think that he will be able to keep the Chiefs in the game. Now, the Bengals do have to get pressure on Mahomes. I think that I think that the Bengals will get pressure on Mahomes early and often, and make him uncomfortable, you know. And I think that that's something that we'll pay attention to, you know. What type of pressure are they going to get on him? And, you know, you get them, you know, in those situations where they are in third and long, you know, that's when things will get interesting. And I think that for the Bengals, you can't let Travis Kelce beat you in this game. You can't let Travis Kelce beat you. Like, at the end of the day, look, I know that Travis Kelce is going to get his, you know, he's going to make his catches. He'll be open a good bit of the time, but eventually Mahomes is going to get caught staring down Kelce, because that's his guy. He throws to him all the time, and for whatever reason, he's always open. But I think the Bengals will find a way to keep, you know, neutralize everybody else. And, you know, yeah, like I said, Kelce, there's certain things that you just can't do, that you know, you can't stop. And Kelce will eat here and there, but don't let him beat you on his own. Just Mahomes and Kelce. Force Mahomes to be able to get the ball to other people and force them to make plays. But like I said, I'm also looking at the Bengals defense, and can they get pressure on Mahomes and make him uncomfortable? Because if they could do that consistently, and like I said, go ahead and establish that early, that they're bringing that pressure, try to get him on the move and see, you know, how well he's able to maneuver, you know, and get, like I said, get pressure up front, on the outside, do whatever you need to do, disguise blitzes, and really make it hard for him. And like I said, man, I got the Bengals advancing to the Super Bowl, man. Super Bowl 57, the Eagles versus the Bengals. And the thing that I love about this matchup, man, you got LSU versus Alabama. You got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase versus Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith. Man, that's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. But hey, that's all I got for y'all, man. I appreciate everybody again jumping in, giving me some of your time. I enjoyed y'all today, man. Love chatting it up, man, talking some sports with y'all. Look, keep rocking with me, man. I'll be back, give you some more sports talk on the next episode, man. And look, y'all be blessed. Have a good one. Stay safe. I'm out.